Bombers. The roar of the presses. Every week, these giant presses roll and keep rolling at tremendous speed. 15,000 an hour until every last one of the 7 million copies of the American Weekly has gone through in full color. Great fiction, interesting features, factual articles, color illustrations, all these are found in every issue of the American Weekly. All these go to make up the nation's reading habit. Another name for the American Weekly, which comes to you every week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. This week's front-page drama, Voices of Destruction, is based upon a feature article entitled, Killed His Artist Wife to Spare Her the Miseries of War, a tragic war story to be featured in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Although the majority of Britain's people are facing the Nazi aerial destruction with a great bravery and heroic calm, there are certain highly imaginative and supersensitive people whose delicately balanced minds cannot stand up under the scenes of death and destruction that take place daily in the British Isles. This front-page drama, Voices of Destruction, is the story of such a man. The time, the present. The place, the professor's home in an attractive London suburb.
Hurry. Hurry to the shelter quickly. The raiders are getting closer.
But the master, Mum. He's in the study and he won't budge one. He just sits there staring and mumbling. Voices, words.
Never mind, Jane. You hurry downstairs to the shelter. I'll fetch the master. Hurry now. There's no time to lose.
Arthur! Arthur, dear! Hurry, please. They've sounded the warning 3 times.
Oh, there you are, dear. Arthur, do you hear me?
Why, Arthur?
What's come over you?
Arthur! Arthur!
Oh, there you are, sir. What a relief. I thought you and the Mrs. May had been when you didn't come down to the shelter, sir. I called you several times, sir.
Yes, Jane. I heard you. I heard your voice. And all the others, too.
All the others, sir?
Yes. Voices. Words, I heard them all.
Are you sure you're quite all right, sir?
Quite well, thank you, Jane.
And the missus, sir, is she all right, sir?
Yes, thank you, Jane. She's quite safe now. You'll find her in there. She's safe. Safe at last.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I'll go to her.
Central! Central, are you there? Answer! Answer, for God's sake, answer! Help! Help! Police! There's been a murder! Murder! Help!
All right, young women. I'm Inspector Osborne. Are you the one to telephone?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's awful. Terribly, terribly awful, sir. It's the missus, sir. Poor thing. He's done a ring.
Yes. Now try to get hold of yourself, my dear. Come in, doctor. Close the door.
Yes.
That's it.
Oh.
Now, my good women, please try to be coherent. Your mistress has been murdered. Take us to her.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. She's in there. In the study. She's in there, too. The master. Poor thing. Oh, do I have to go in, sir? I can't bear it, really. I can't, sir.
Very well. You may remain out here. Come along, doctor. Oh, there she is. I'll attend to it, Inspector. I'm afraid it's all over, Inspector. She's dead. Apparently struck down with it.
Yes.
Professor Arthur Lloyd James, I arrest you for the murder of your wife.
Yes. Yes, I understand perfectly. You see, we were so happy.
I must warn you that anything you say may be used against you as evidence.
Thank you. We were so very happy. I wanted her to die. Why should it like that? Rather than face a bleak future, I decided that she should die and not be asked to face it.
That's due to concussion of the brain, Inspector.
Thank you, Doctor. And I suppose we'd better follow legal procedure and get a statement from him.
Yes, but perhaps I'd better ask him.
Very well, Doctor. I rather think this is more in your line than mine.
Quite. Professor James, in view of the existing circumstances, do you wish to make a statement?
Yes. Yes, please.
There is pen, ink, and paper there.
Yes. Now, don't bother, Professor. You sit still. I'll get it for you.
Thank you. Well,
here we are.
There you are, Professor.
Thank you very much. You were very kind. I shall write it down just as it happened. The voices and the words. The words, you know, have always been my specialty. The highest authority in England, I have been called on words. It all began that lovely autumn day in October. Splendid. Splendid, Elsie, my dear. Your playing improves every day.
And why not? With such heavenly inspirations in you, my dear?
Have you heard the news? It's ghastly.
David, my boy, how many times must I ask you not to come bursting into the house like that? It shattered every vestige of peace.
Oh, you jolly well won't think so when you hear what's coming in over the wire.
David, please.
Oh, confound it all. You two can't sit here and stew in your utter complacency with a war about to explode about your heads.
Sir,
Hitler and the Jerrys have begun the invasion of Czechoslovakia.
There is no need for alarm. There will be no war. These international differences can be peaceably settled with the magic of words. Not for the violent deeds of war.
England and France on one side, Hitler and Signor Mussolini on the other, have pledged their word of honor to a peaceable settlement of our differences. Our signatures are affixed to this document I hold in my hand. With it, we have purchased peace in our time. You see, David, I was right. The magic of words has done it. Now we can settle down to enjoy peace and happiness.
March 14th, the Republic of Czechoslovakia dissolved. German troops march in. Germans occupy Bohemia and Moravia.
So great is the power of words that 1,000 arguments can usually be summed up in one single magic word. Peace.
German troops headed by Herr Hitler enter the port of Memel. The Free District of Danzig returns to the Reich. April 7th, Italian troops invade Albania. Young Queen Geraldine with newborn son imperiled by bombs. Berlin, Friday, September 1st, 1939. The German Chancellor speaks.
Troops and defense forces, the Polish nation, reduce my efforts for peaceable regulation of naval relations. All the suggestions which I've made for peaceful solution have been rejected. If such an improvement could be offered to the German Reich, then the German nation would not deserve anything better than to disappear from the state. I have decided to speak to the Poles in the same language as they are speaking to us. Our soldiers have been shattered, and since 5:45, we have been shooting back. Long live our people! Und our life!
London, September 3rd.
I am speaking to you from the cabinet room of 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once
to withdraw their troops from Poland. A state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently, this country is at war with Germany.
I've come to say goodbye, Father. I've received my official notice, and I'm to report for training in the Royal Air Force today.
I was hoping that perhaps your mother and I might have been spared this final blow. You still have a year to go before your class is called.
I know how you feel, Father. But I couldn't wait. Our country needs me now. Please try to understand.
I do, my son. Goodbye, and God be with you.
May 10th, 1940. At daybreak this morning, without any official warning, German troops crossed the Netherlands, Belgian, and Luxembourg frontiers. The invasion of the Low Countries has begun by air, sea, and land. German warplanes rain bombs on open cities. Thousands of civilians, old men, women, and children have been killed. May 11th. Neville Chamberlain resigns as Prime Minister. Winston Churchill forms new cabinet.
German drive sweeps on. To prevent further bloodshed and annihilation, Dutch troops lay down arms.
The King of the Belgians surrenders army to Germans. Dunkirk.
Italy declares war.
France asks for armistice.
All out war on England.
450 German planes bomb London. St. Giles, St. Paul's, many famous churches hit. Buckingham Palace damaged by time bombs.
German raids increase. Royal Air Force downs 232 planes in single day.
Have you completely finished with your statement now, Professor? Perhaps you'd better try, Doctor.
Very well.
Professor James, may I have the statement now, please? Excuse me, Inspector. I'll go over and get it. Although he doesn't signify, I think he has finished.
Well, Doctor?
He's not written a word.
Strange?
Yes, strange. For a man who once had such a command over him. Now, not a word spoken or written will come.
We'd better take him away now. It's most regrettable, but he'll have to stand trial.
They led the poor gentle soul away. The trial was brief, the verdict a foregone conclusion. Guilty, but mentally deranged, to be kept in custody until the king's pleasure be known. You've just heard Voices of Destruction, a front-page drama based upon the true life feature story to be found in next Sunday's American Weekly under the title, Killed His Artist Wife to Spare Her the Miseries of War. This is but one of the many dramatic, interesting, and worthwhile features to be found in every issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you each week for your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Dramas. The roar of the presses. Every week these giant presses roll and keep rolling at tremendous speed, 15,000 an hour, until every last one of the 7 million copies of the American Weekly has gone through in full color.
Great fiction, interesting features, factual articles, color illustrations.
All these are found in every issue of the American Weekly. All these go to make up the nation's reading habit. Another name for the American Weekly, which comes to you every week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Every lover of good fiction, every theater and moviegoer has at one time or another thrilled to the story of François Villon, the Vagabond King, and how he organized the beggars of Paris into a court of miracles. This highly adventurous and colorful story must have inspired the modern-day beggars of Paris, because once again they have banded themselves into a silent but highly dangerous army to fight the German invaders. Their system of sabotage and counter-espionage is creating havoc with the highly taunted German Gestapo. It is this thrilling story of these companions of François Villon, as they call themselves, that forms the basis for this week's front-page drama, dramatized from the thrilling true-life story entitled France's Ragged Regiment of Beggars by Jacques Lerminat, a famous Paris journalist, featured in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly. Our story opens in a little war-torn village near Paris. A handful of French soldiers are holding off the vicious attack of the oncoming German army. Lieutenant Max Opéki is talking to his fellow officer, Antoine Saltier.
It is useless to hold out any longer, Antoine. The Boche is far too powerful. There are too many of them.
You are right, Max. We've done all we can. Dismiss your men. Tell them to get out and escape as best they can.
How about you, Antoine? Where will you go?
I do not know, Max. I'm cut off from any chance of getting home now.
Here, good friend, Antoine. Here is my address in Paris. It is not far away. If you escape, meet me there.
Very good, Max. 1,000 thanks. I'll try to find you, but we've got to separate now and make good our escape. There isn't a minute to spare. Au revoir, Max.
Au revoir, Antoine. Remember, I'll see you in Paris. God be with you. I'll see you.
Tell me, is this where Max Opéki lives?
His apartment is here, upstairs. Second door to left. But be careful.
Huh?
Those gentlemen.